Club Podcast. This is Christine. I actually just recorded episode 19. We are here for episode 20. I'm doing a little bit of bulk recording, just these two episodes together, because I will be out of town and I will be coming back on the day this episode is supposed to air. So, yeah, probably a better idea to do it ahead of time than do it the day of, right? So, anyways, don't have too much updates on how far I've gotten in the TV show House, or how far I've gotten reading the Stephen King book. We are actually just going to go ahead and jump straight into the Vicodin and Vows book. We're going to try to get 7 chapters done today. The first chapter was called A Quiet Night for Once. The girls are with Bub, and I don't know where they are, but they're not in the house. It's just House and Wilson, and they have some nice conversations about family and about their life, and then about intimacy, and House explains that he overthinks things a lot, and he's afraid of being rejected or pushed away and stuff like that. And that's basically the whole chapter. So the next chapter is called Father's Day. It's just brunch, Wilson says.
Brunch? House scoffs. It's a day designed to remind everyone their dad either sucks, left, or died.
Wilson shrugs. And yet, our kids made us a tie out of macaroni. So yes, it's Father's Day. The girls wake up, House and Wilson. They got macaroni tie. Basically, the whole day it's like they're talking about how different their family is, but how connected they feel and how lovely life is. Basically the same stuff they talk about every single chapter. Wilson's cooking. He gets a phone call. And he's like, hello, this is James Wilson. Hello, Mr. Wilson, came the clipped voice on the other end. Female, polished, legal. My name is Karen Ellis. I'm calling on behalf of my client, Miss Cynthia Hargrove. Wilson stiffened. That name, vaguely familiar, one of Olivia's biological relatives. House had mentioned it once in a flurry of eye rolls and sarcasm back when they first got guardianship. Distant relative, no real involvement, the kind who sends a birthday card every 5 years with someone else's handwriting. I'm sorry, Wilson said cautiously. What is this regarding? Miss Hargrove would like to initiate a reconnection process with her biological granddaughter. She's recently become aware of the child's current placement, and she's filed for partial custody. This is a weird situation, right? I mean, I thought the whole purpose of adoption was that there was no other guardianship, right? Like, I mean, you can have an open adoption, which is something different, but like, you are the guardian. That's like the whole thing. Anyway, so this is kind of weird situation. I don't think this is, well, actually, I don't know if this is realistic. I do see a world where a grandmother suddenly becomes more invested in their grandchild's life after they become adopted, especially if she doesn't approve of the parents. But at the same time, I feel like that situation is not common. I don't know. Let's see where this goes. Everything stopped. The hum of the dishwasher faded to static. The air in the kitchen shifted, thick, suffocating. She what? It's a formal petition. You should be receiving the documentation by early next week. We encourage a civil dialogue between parties, but we are prepared to proceed through family court if necessary. Wilson barely remembered ending the call. He hung up, phone clattering to the countertop. His hands were shaking. Not much, but enough. House found him a minute later, still standing in the kitchen, eyes unfocused, fingers gripping the counter like it was the only thing anchoring him to the floor. Hey, you look like you saw Cuddy in yoga pants again. Wilson looked up slowly. That was a lawyer. We're being sued? Not exactly. A breath. That woman, Cynthia Hargrove, Olivia's grandmother or great aunt or whatever she is, she's filed for partial custody. House blinked. Once. Twice. Then the storm hit.
No, he said immediately. No, absolutely not. That woman didn't give a damn for 5 years. Olivia doesn't even know her.
I know. She's doing this for what? A sympathy headline? A tax deduction? You don't get to ignore a kid's trauma, then show up with a court order and a sugar cookie. I know, House. This is what people do. They see a cute kid and think they get to lay claim like it's a dog at the shelter. She's not going to win, but she could. I called our lawyer, Wilson added. She's looking into it, but if this goes to court, if this becomes a custody battle, we'll destroy her. We'll tear her apart. You mean I would charm the judge and cry on cue, and you would alienate every juror within 15 minutes? That's why they love me. But neither of them laughed. They stood there in the quiet, the weight of something awful pressing against the walls. In the next room, Olivia was coloring. Sarah was humming the Six soundtrack while doing homework. Their family, perfect in its imperfect way, was unaware, untouched, for now. I'm not letting her go through that, House said. She's ours, Wilson. She's safe. She's loved. That woman has no idea what Olivia's been through, what we've been through. Wilson nodded. We need to be careful, strategic. I don't do careful. I do right. We do both. And then Wilson reached out, just barely, a brush of fingers to House's wrist. Not quite comfort, not quite apology, but enough. The next morning, the sun crept lazily through the blinds as House and Wilson stood at the door, both dressed in the same suits they wore to every meeting that mattered. You good? Wilson asked, addressing the cufflinks House had given him for their anniversary last year. Wait, they've already been married for a year? I have no idea how time works in this book. Time almost seems like it doesn't exist. House gave a small grunt. No, but I think good is really on the table today. They didn't talk again on their way to the law firm. Oh, wow, that's quick. The silence hanging between them like a shield. Each man lost in thoughts that felt too big to share. When they arrived, Wilson's nerves hit full throttle. Child advocacy attorney, serious, intense, powerful, had agreed to take their case after a brief consultation. As they stepped into the reception area, House immediately turned on the charm. It was like clockwork. He gave the receptionist a wry grin and leaned against the counter, cane tapping rhythmically as he flashed her a flirtatious smirk. Hey there, Dr. Gregory House, and this, he nodded towards Wilson, is my ever-patient husband, Dr. James Wilson. He's the one with the actual heart. Me, I'm just the one who doesn't screw things up most of the time. The receptionist, who was clearly no stranger to House's antics, rolled her eyes, but her lips hugged up in spite of herself. Dr. House, right on time. You two can head right in. Wilson, a little flustered by House's antics, shook his head and they made their way down the hallway. I'm not sure that was the best approach, House.
Come on, you know I can charm a jury with just my smile. Don't worry, I'm the face of our defense.
Wilson rolled his eyes. You're impossible. Inside the attorney's office, it was all business. A large, polished desk sat in front of them, with a few papers already neatly arranged for review. The woman sitting behind it had short, sharp features and a no-nonsense attitude that immediately put Wilson on edge, but House seemed to take it in stride, settling into the chair with casual lean. The attorney introduced herself as Jessica Clark, and after a quick handshake, she got straight to the point. So, gentlemen, what I'm hearing is that Olivia's biological relative, Cynthia Hargrove, has filed a petition for partial custody. Wilson nodded. That's right. We don't know if she even knew where Olivia was. Well, she knows now, and she wants her back. She's filed for partial custody and visitation rights. House's expression darkened, which is, of course, the equivalent of her stepping in to ruin a kid's life. She hasn't been there. She's a stranger. I understand your situation, and I'll be presenting our defense accordingly. We have a good case. Olivia has been with you for over a year. Wait, what? How is time working? And how time... I feel like there's a time jump every chapter that only the author knows about. We don't get to... We have no idea what it is. All right, anyways. Cynthia isn't backing down. She's a relative, and that gives her some weight in court. I can't imagine that it does in this situation, but all right. Wilson's stomach twitched. But we're her parents. She's ours. We
are her parents, House interrupted. She's lived with us for over a year. She knows we're her dads. We're the ones who've taken care of her.
Exactly. We created a home for her. She's part of our family. Jessica nodded, her fingers steepling? And that's what we'll argue in court. I can make a strong case for both of you, but you need to be prepared for what might come. This relative is not backing down. They are filing to see her more regularly, and they want shared custody. The silence in the room was suffocating as Wilson and House exchanged a glance. There was nothing they hadn't already known in that moment, nothing they hadn't feared. But hearing it from someone else, someone who was paid to win these kinds of battles, it made all of it much more real. "We'll fight for Olivia. We will," Wilson said. "She's part of our family. She's our daughter. We won't let anyone take that from her." Jessica nodded. "I believe you, but we'll need to prepare for a tough road ahead." As they walked out of the office, House didn't crack a single joke. Neither did Wilson. They didn't need to. At home that night, the conversation shifted to a quieter, more reflective space. Sarah had been unusually quiet at dinner, not her usual loud and bubbly self. After dinner, she approached Wilson, her eyes wide with curiosity. "Dad, something's going on with Olivia, isn't it?" she asked. "I can tell. You've been acting weird lately." Wilson hesitated. It wasn't that he didn't want to tell her. It was that he didn't want to scare her. But House, ever the blunt one, answered before he could say anything.
"It's nothing you need to worry about, kiddo. We're just making sure that Olivia stays with us. That's all."
Sarah's brow furrowed. "But why would someone try to take her away?" Wilson kneeled down in front of her. "Sweetheart, sometimes people make bad decisions, but we're her parents. You don't need to worry about anything. We won't let anyone take her." House ruffled Sarah's hair.
"Yeah, we'll fight for her. No one's taking Olivia from this family."
And Sarah, a little more reassured but still anxious, nodded. "I know you will," she whispered. As they finished getting the girls ready for bed, Wilson caught a moment alone with House in the hallway. "House, what if we lose her?"
"If they take her from us, they'll have to go through me first. Together."
"Together," Wilson said softly. "We'll fight for her together." House nodded once, his gaze flickering with a fire Wilson hadn't seen in a long time. "Together," he repeated. "And don't worry, we'll win. I always win." But they both knew this wasn't a game. The air in House's office was thick, not with the usual awkward silence or biting humor, but with an unfamiliar tension. He had called Cuddy, of all people, to meet him after hours. "Okay, now, where are we? What? They're at work now? What? Where is this in the timeline?" Okay, yeah, so Cuddy's there, and they're talking about Olivia, which is very interesting that he chose Cuddy, of all people, who is constantly getting mad at them for no reason. Anyways, they have a conversation about who Olivia's better off with. Olivia eventually figures out that something's going on. I don't know if they ever told her. But she asked, "Am I going to have to live with someone else?" And Wilson's like, "No, sweetheart, no, you're not going anywhere. Not if we have anything to say about it. You're our daughter, Olivia. You're staying right here with us, always. I don't know what's going to happen, but I promise you, Olivia, we will do everything in our power to make sure you're safe." "I'm scared," Olivia whispered. So yeah, very heartfelt moment. And then Wilson thinks about, you know, the future of his family. He's worried. And then I guess there's another time jump. So they're at the courthouse now. And Wilson goes, "Are you ready?" "No," House replied flatly. "But when have I ever been ready for anything?" Wilson chuckled, despite the situation. "You're going to be fine." As they entered the courthouse, House's cane echoed through the large, cavernous halls, drawing the occasional glance. But Wilson's presence, his steady demeanor, his perfect posture, helped calm some of the nerves that both of them were feeling. The girls, dressed in matching dresses with puffy skirts, looked up at them with big, wide eyes, their faces brimming with uncertainty. Sarah was clutching Olivia's hand tightly, the two of them trying to be brave. The family member, the relative fighting for partial custody, was already seated on the other side of the room, a woman in her late 60s with a haughty demeanor. She had made it clear that she believed a traditional family, in her eyes, meant a man and a woman raising children, not two men. Her comments about two men raising girls felt like old-fashioned barbs being thrown, words meant to wound. But as the proceedings began, House couldn't help himself. He shifted in his seat, the uncomfortable fabric of his suit making him even more irritable. Finally, he couldn't stay silent anymore.
"I have something to say," House's voice cut through the room.
The judge raised an eyebrow, clearly not used to being interrupted in his own courtroom, but House didn't care.
"I'm not a model citizen," House began,
and then he decided to follow it up with,
"I'm an addict,"
which, come on, dude.
Anyways, he goes, "I'm an addict, a jerk, I'm a pain in the ass, I know, but I tell you one thing, I'm not going to lie to that girl. I've never made her feel small, I've never made her feel like she wasn't enough, and I've never,
ever made her feel unloved. I'm not perfect, but I'm her dad, and that's what matters. There was silence in the room. For a moment, it felt like the world had stopped moving. The judge, though his expression remained impassive, seemed to consider House's words carefully. Wilson's hand tightened around House's, his heart pounding in his chest. He had never heard House speak like this, not about himself and certainly not about their family. He was proud of him. He was proud of both of them. The judge nodded slowly. I'll take this matter under advisement. We'll reconvene in a few days. You may go. In a few days? That seems like a long time, right? Okay, anyways. The days passed in a haze. The house felt quieter than usual. Then one evening after dinner, Sarah made a decision. I'm going to write a letter, she said. Wilson watched as Sarah scribbled on a piece of paper. The two girls worked together, Olivia occasionally offering to help with the spelling, her tiny fingers tracing the letters as they formed. When they were done, the letter was clear and simple. They weren't asking for sympathy or to be coddled. They were simply stating the truth. To the Honorable Judge, we are Sarah and Olivia. Our dads make us feel safe. That's what real family is. We want to stay with them. Please let us stay. Thank you. Bub, ever the determined matriarch, took it upon herself to hand-deliver the letter to the courthouse the very next morning. She made sure it was delivered into the judge's hands personally, and it wasn't until late that afternoon the family received word. The letter had made an impact. The judge, though he had been stern during the proceedings, was moved by the simplicity of the girl's words. He had seen legal cases, disputes, and arguments 100 times over, but something about the heartfelt plea from two young girls struck a chord deep within him. It was undeniable. That night, after the girls had gone to bed, House and Wilson sat on the couch together, the tension of the past few days still lingering in the air, but it wasn't as heavy as it had been before. They didn't have all the answers, and they still didn't know what the future held, but for the first time in days, they felt like a family, like they had something to fight for. "Do you think it'll work?" Wilson asked quietly. "I don't know," House replied, "but we'll fight for them, no matter what. That's what I'm afraid of. You're a terrible lawyer, but when it comes to fighting for people you love, you're damn good at it." "I've had a lot of practice, Wilson. A lot of practice." Let's see. Their lives have been so far from conventional, and the thought of someone taking their daughter away felt like a knife to the gut. And then one day it happened. The letter arrived. The envelope was thick, official-looking, and House could tell by the handwriting on the front that it wasn't going to be the usual run-of-the-mill kind of mail. With a quiet sigh, he tore it open, the weight of his hand betraying the tension in his body. Wilson watched him from across the room, his own breath suspended as House skimmed through the document. "House," Wilson asked softly, "what does it say?" House didn't answer immediately, still reading. "Well," Wilson pressed. "It's official," House said. "We have full, permanent custody." "Yay, they won." They can't take them away from us," Wilson whispered. "No, they can't." "You did it. You really did it." "I always knew I was better at this than I let on. And to think you almost didn't want to be a dad." "True, but now I am one. I have to say, it's not the worst thing." "Here's something else, House." To celebrate, House and Wilson decided to throw caution to the wind. They ordered takeout, lots of it, of course, and when the food arrived, they spread it out on the table. The smell of Chinese food, pizza, and sushi filled the house. For the first time in weeks, everything felt normal, comfortable, like a family again. But the celebration wasn't over yet. And then they do tie-dye, and then they talk a lot about tie-dye for the rest of the chapter. So yay, they won. They have full custody over the daughters they adopted, which I thought is what happened when you officially adopted someone. But in this situation, apparently, there was some speculation about it. So
the next chapter is called The Big D Talk. And Sarah gets her period. She's 13 at this point. And so, you know, like normal puberty age. And so House and Wilson are like, oh my gosh, we have to give her the puberty talk. I'm not entirely sure what they mean by the big D. Cause I'm thinking period starts with a P, puberty starts with a P, pads, P, tampons, D. Like, I can't think of what exactly they mean when they say the big D, and I don't know if I want to know. Anyways, the entire chapter is about them teaching the girls what puberty is, and so I feel like
we can skip this one and just go straight ahead to the next chapter.
All right, the next chapter is called Under the Influence. And as you might have already guessed, it's about getting drunk. But nobody's driving, luckily. Don't drink and drive. Don't do that. Not cool. Anyways, House and Wilson get drunk. And they're, like, I think they're, like, alone in the house. That's what it sounds like. And they, you know, the screen fades to black. As I like to say, it's other than them getting drunk and making out, that's basically the whole chapter, right? So, heading on straight to the next chapter, this is called Family Movie Night. All right, I'm going to summarize this chapter as well because not too much happens. It's movie night. The girls want to watch, or one of them wants to watch The Princess Diaries. I don't know, the other one wants to watch Jurassic Park. They end up watching Jurassic Park. Have a great night. And then they ask Wilson to read them a bedtime story. And Wilson goes with an Edgar Allan Poe story. The one where the heart is beating under the floorboards. And that's the entire chapter. All right, the next chapter is called The Teenage Phase. It opens up by saying it was shortly after Sarah's 13th birthday, which confused me because a few chapters ago, she was like 13. And like now she's like just past 13. So I'm a little confused if, I don't know, if she like turned 13 and then she got her period and then all those chapters happened and then now, I don't know. Anyways, she's just being like a normal 13-year-old, just giving attitude and sass, and Wilson and House have to figure out, you know, how to discipline her. And that's the entire chapter. So, sorry if that's something you're so interested in reading, but we're going to go ahead and skip that one and go right to the next chapter, which is called A Stroke of Fate. So, it was rare, peaceful Saturday evening at Wilson's house, and they were all excited for family game night. Sarah, still in her teenage mood, reluctantly agreeing to join, while Olivia was practically bouncing in her seat. All right, Wilson said, let's get started. House, you're the banker. House raised an eyebrow. I think you mean dictator of finance, right? Sure, as long as you don't embezzle the bank this time. One time, and you know the odds were stacked against me. You never stop arguing, do you, House? You should have seen us when we played Scrabble. The game started in earnest, and it was immediately clear that everyone was just as competitive as House and Wilson expected. Sarah was sneaking in her deals, trying to form alliances with Olivia, much to House's disdain. No teaming up, Sarah. I'll buy both of you out before you even know it. Olivia giggled. Dad's a big baby when it comes to losing. Am I? I'm just strategic, and that's why you two should stay out of my business. Bub was seated next to Olivia, helping her keep track of her money with a smile. You think I'm playing with a bunch of kids. The laughter and the back and forth of Monopoly kept the mood light and warm, but as the game progressed, a strange heaviness began to settle in the air. Sarah had just made a successful trade for a set of properties when House suddenly noticed that Bub wasn't laughing anymore. She was sitting very still, staring at the board, her hand frozen halfway to the stack of cards in front of her. Bub? Wilson asked gently. Bub blinked slowly, her hand trembling slightly as she put the card down. I'm fine. I'm just feeling a little dizzy. Something wasn't right. House shot to his feet. Wilson, something's wrong. Wilson was already at Bub's side. Bub, we're gonna get you some help, all right? Bub blinked a few times, trying to focus. I just need to rest for a minute. I'm fine. But House, always quick to notice the smallest changes, knew better. Wilson, call 911. Now. Bub, stay with us. Help is on the way. You're going to be fine. Sarah, still sitting at the table, looked like she had been frozen in place. Olivia, sitting on the floor near her, was staring wide-eyed at the scene unfolding in front of her. Minutes passed like hours as they waited for the ambulance. Bub's eyes started to flutter, her speech becoming less coherent. House, trying to mask the worry creeping into his chest, kept a steady stream of calm, assuring her that help was coming. It's just a little scare, Bub. We'll get you checked out. You're not getting out of game night that easy. Wilson finished the call, then knelt beside her. The ambulance is on its way, Bub. You're going to be okay. Bub managed to smile. Just don't let me miss Monopoly.
Wilson squeezed her hand. You'll be back in no time, I'm sure of it. The sterile fluorescent lighting of the hospital waiting room casts an eerie glow on House and Wilson, both of them bleedy-eyed and running on fumes. They hadn't slept much since the ambulance had whisked Bub away, and the worry gnawed at them, even as they tried to keep calm for the girls. Wilson had been pacing, but now he was slumped in a chair, phone in hand, giving quiet yet authoritative instructions to the nursing staff back at the hospital where he worked. His voice, tired but firm, carried the weight of a man who was used to being in charge. Listen, Wilson said into the phone. Make sure you're monitoring her vitals every hour. I don't care if it's a quiet night. Keep an eye on her. The last thing we need is a slip-up. And don't forget the medication. Bub's allergic to penicillin. Got it? A brief pause followed, and then the nurse on the other end confirmed everything, but Wilson's brow furrowed, still clearly uneasy. He ended the call with a sigh, rubbing a hand over his face. Are you really trying to run the hospital from here? House teased, though his voice lacked its usual edge. He sat next to Wilson, his elbows resting on his knees as he stared at the empty hallway. Someone has to, Wilson muttered. I need to know she's being taken care of properly. It's hard to trust anyone when it's her. This is so confusing. Well, I thought, aren't they in, they're in a hospital. I thought, okay, they're in a hospital. Wilson is on the phone, and it specifically says, he's giving instructions to the nursing staff at the hospital where he works. So I'm assuming they're at a, they're at a different hospital, but then, I don't know, he's talking like he's talking to the nurses that are taking care of Bub, but he's physically in the hospital, so why is he on the, I don't know. All right, we're just gonna go with it. Meanwhile, in the waiting room, the girls were quiet, sitting side by side on a row of plastic, hard plastic chairs. Olivia, the younger of the two, was holding onto Sarah's arm. Why do we need to... We already know that Olivia's the younger of the two. Why are you telling us again? I have a weird... I don't like to think that this is true. But, the cover photo for this book looks very much like it's AI. And the chapters are posted... Half of it was posted on April 5th, and then the last four or five were posted on April 6th, and then the last few were posted in May. I really hope this is not an AI story, but there are certain things that just don't quite add up, don't quite make sense, that's making me think this might be AI, and I'd be very disappointed if I was reading an AI story. Anyways, I don't like this, Olivia said. I don't want anything to happen to Bub. Sarah sighed. I know, Liv. I know. Liv. This is the first time we see her giving Olivia a nickname. She's going to be fine, right, Sarah? I hope so. House and Wilson finally made it back to Bub's hospital room. Bub was lying in the bed, hooked up to various machines that hummed quietly in the background. The faint beeping of the heart monitor was almost soothing, a reminder that Bub was alive, though still in a fragile state. Wilson was the first to sit beside her, brushing a stray lock of hair from her forehead. Hey, Bub, he whispered. You're doing okay. They've got you all hooked up to everything you need. Bub blinked slowly. It's just a little scare, my boy. Nothing I can't handle. House watched exchange with quiet intensity. He didn't say anything at first, but his eyes softened when he saw the bond between Wilson and his mother. Stop trying to make me worry, you old broad, House finally said with a grin. You're not getting out of a game like that easily. Don't get too cocky, House. I'll be back before you know it. You'll need me to remind you how to play. Wilson gave her hand a gentle squeeze. Don't you go anywhere. I'm not playing Monopoly without you. Back in the waiting room, Sarah had her phone in her lap now, no longer looking at it. Olivia was still leaning against her, her little hand clutching tightly in Sarah's. I wish we could do something, Olivia said, looking up at her older sister. Sarah sighed. I know, I feel helpless too. Do you think Bub will be okay? Yeah. She's tough. She'll be fine. For the first time in a long while, Sarah didn't feel the need to be the cool older sister, the one who always had everything under control. Just then, House and Wilson came back into the waiting room, looking slightly more relieved but still worried. Their eyes met the girls before they spoke. "Bub's doing much better," Wilson said. "They're keeping her overnight, but she's stable."
"Yeah," House added. "She's not going anywhere just yet."
Relief washed over the room, and though they all knew it wasn't over, there was a sense of calm that settled in. They would get through this together, just like they always did. Sarah stood up, walking over to Wilson and House. She wrapped her arms around them both, the weight of the moment finally sinking in. "Thanks, Dad," she said quietly. I didn't realize how much she means to me." Wilson's eyes softened. "She means the world to all of us, kiddo." The drive back from the hospital was quiet but filled with an undercurrent of relief. The sun was setting, casting a soft glow over the trees as House, Wilson, and the girls sat in the car, Bub resting in the passenger seat, wrapped in a blanket. Oh, she's going home already? Okay. Wilson broke the silence. "Almost home," he murmured. "We're almost there, Bub, just a little longer." Bub smiled faintly. "I'm not going anywhere, my boy. You'll get sick of me before I'm gone." "I'll never get sick of you, Bub." When they finally pulled into the driveway, House hopped out of the car first, moving quickly to open the door for Bub.
"I've got her," House said to Wilson.
Wilson hesitated for a moment, but then nodded, grateful that House was there to help. The two of them carefully assisted Bub into the house. Olivia and Sarah followed close behind, Sarah's usual sense of defiance replaced with a quiet concern. Once inside, they settled Bub on the couch. Wilson fluffed up the pillows behind her head, while House grabbed a blanket from the closet. Bub sank into the cushions, her body clearly worn out from the ordeal. "Well, I can't say it's been a relaxing vacation," she quipped, "but I'm sure it's one I'll never forget." Wilson rolled his eyes. "You're lucky we're all here, or I might have left you at the hospital just to teach you a lesson in resting." House sat down beside Bub.
"You're lucky we're all here to make sure you don't do anything stupid like getting out of bed too soon."
Bub grinned back. "You two need to get a grip on the sarcasm. It's not good for your help." Sarah let out a huff of laughter. "She's got you there, Dad." Wilson looked at her, his eyes softening. "I'm just happy you're all here. After everything that happened, I just want to make sure we're all okay." As the evening wore on, the house settled into a quiet rhythm. Bub was tucked in on the couch with a warm blanket, and the girls had started to prepare for bed. House and Wilson, though exhausted, hovered nearby, keeping an eye on things as they tended to Bub's needs. Wilson sat in the kitchen, leaning against the counter as he watched House stir a pot of soup. The exhaustion was obvious to both of them, but neither of them wanted to admit how much they'd been affected by the scare. "You know," Wilson said, "I'm really glad you're here." House didn't look up from the soup.
Someone has to keep you from doing anything ridiculous. Can't have you running yourself ragged trying to save the world."
Wilson's smile was soft, grateful. "I know, but it's more than that. You've been there for me and for her, for all of us."
"I'm not going anywhere," House said, his tone quiet, but no less firm. "We're in this together. All of us."
Bub's recovery was slow but steady. The next day, she was up and about, sitting in a chair by the window, watching the world go by. The girls were both hovering around her, talking softly as if trying to soak up every second of her presence. It had been a long, difficult journey to get to this point, but House and Wilson knew that as long as they had each other, they could get through anything together. All right, next chapter is called Parental Controls. I guess Sarah films a TikTok with House and Wilson, but she doesn't get their permission. TikTok kind of blows up, and House and Wilson get mad because they're like, "Hey, like, we didn't know you were doing this. Like, we're in this TikTok and we didn't want to be, you know?" So House is like, "Hey, give me your phone. You're going without it." And Sarah's like, obviously, like any teenager, like, "What? You can't take away my phone." Wilson wants to be good cop, and so he's like, "No, I guess we don't have to take your phone." And then House gets mad because he's like, "I just said we were taking her phone. What are you doing?" They get mad at each other. They have an argument. They end up not taking Sarah's phone. Olivia gets mad because she's not mad. She's kind of freaking out, though, because she's like, "Are you getting a divorce? When people fight, that means they don't love each other." And House and Wilson explain to her that people that love each other do fight. And then House sleeps on the couch that night because he's like, "I'm making a point because I'm mad at you." And then they wait till the next morning, and then they kind of talk it out, and they decide that, yeah, Sarah should go without her phone. And they're like, "We're going to have quality family time, so we're going to put the phone away, Sarah." And Sarah's like, "No, I don't want to give away my phone. And then Wilson's like, all right, girl, come on, we're doing a family thing. Put away the phone for now. And she does. So they're like, hey, it's a start. And that is that entire chapter. All right, the next chapter is called Dancing Under the Stars. And it's a romantic evening. House and Wilson are hanging out. They do a little dance. They're having a romantic evening. Wilson brings up the idea of having another kid. And after a long conversation, House is kind of on board and is like, you know what? Yeah, we've made it work with the girls. Like, why not bring someone else into it? So the chapter after that is called The Ghost in the Closet. This is kind of a wild one. Olivia has a nightmare. She wakes up screaming. She wakes up House and Wilson. They go to see what's going on, and Olivia's convinced that there's a ghost in her closet. Turns out it's just a mouse. They're fine, but Olivia's still pretty freaked out. The next morning, Sarah's mad that nobody woke her up to tell her about the ghost, I guess. Bub thinks everything's ridiculous. She's getting ready to observe Passover. And then, I don't remember whose idea it was, but they end up getting out a Ouija board and trying to talk to the ghost. Doesn't really go anywhere. And then they celebrate Passover. Okay, I think we can actually knock out the rest of the book. The next chapter is called The Quiet Conversation, and it's just another conversation about whether they're ready or not to have another kid. The chapter after that is called A Date Night with Malfunction, parentheses, Stacy. And Wilson's ex-wife, Stacy, happens to be at the same restaurant that they're at. And House, as usual, very in character of him, makes it far more awkward than it ever needed to be. And that's the entire chapter. We got two more chapters left. We're going to knock them out today. Next chapter is called Electives Don't Prepare You for This, parentheses, A Bit of Spice. I Know It's Been a Minute, close parentheses. So probably won't read the entire chapter. To be honest, I kind of just been summarizing at this point anyways, but let's see what this one brings. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and summarize this one as well. They are celebrating or observing some kind of holiday. There's a lot of talk about lighting candles and saying prayers and stuff. Anyways, the kids go to bed. Bub's in bed. And House and Wilson just have some nice alone time. And we're going to leave it at that. This last chapter, I feel like I should read in full just because I've been really flying through the last seven chapters. This last chapter is called Table for Two and One Judgmental Matriarch. Sunday brunch in the Wilson House household came with three certainties. Bub would make enough food to feed six, Olivia would get syrup in her hair, someone would say something that made Wilson want to crawl inside the dishwasher and close the door behind him. Today did not disappoint. James, Bub said, watching him sit down with a slow, knowing look. You're walking very gingerly. Are your shoes too tight or did Gregory... Oh, what the... I'm sorry. She says... His mother says, are your shoes too tight or did Gregory finally manage to dislocate your pelvis? Which, Bub... Girl... Take it down like five notches here. Wilson nearly choked on his coffee. Mother, what? She sipped her tea. He looked very proud this morning, like a cat who found the cream and then knocked it off the counter anyway. Olivia, still in her frozen pajamas, looked up from her pancake stack. What's a pelvis? Sarah, not even looking up from her phone, muttered, oh, I'm already hating this chapter. Sarah says, I think it's what Dad damaged during whatever happened last night. Wilson rubbed his temples. It's 10 a.m. Why are we like this? Good point. Why are we like this? Oh, apparently they were very loud last night. We're going to go ahead and skip ahead a little bit. All right, so then they go to work at the hospital. They pulled into the parking lot. Wilson checked his phone. I have consults at 10, a tumor board at noon, and someone in palliative who needs me to adjust their DNR. You? House stretched. New case. Lupus, probably. Chase thinks it's fungal. Foreman's already annoyed. Business as usual. Wilson looked over at him. So what you're saying is you're going to be bored in an hour and try to seduce me in my office? I am the office morale. You are the opposite of office morale. They exited the car together, briefcases slung, white coats billowing, two men very much still in love, still exhausted, and still pretending they weren't considering christening Cuddy's former desk. Inside, the lobby buzzed with patients, nurses, and that familiar antiseptic hum of disaster waiting to happen. House glanced at Wilson and grinned. Okay, clearly they are planning on having sex in Cuddy's office. I don't know why. And then I guess someone stops them on their way to Cuddy's office. We never really know for sure whether or not they're joking about it, but it's the joke's going on too long. I feel like they were actually planning on doing it in Cuddy's office. Anyways, they end up going over to Foreman and Chase and Cameron, and they start discussing this case, and it's not lupus, and maybe it's a tick bite, and blah, blah, blah. None of that's super relevant. So now we're at later that day, lunch at the diagnostics team room. House had officially been kicked out of the clinic after diagnosing a patient with being insufferably boring and trying to prescribe them cable TV. Wilson had real work to do, which made it all the more annoying when House showed up in his lab, stole his sandwich, and then dragged him back to the team lounge under the pretense of lunch, which turned into House sitting in Wilson's lap in a chair clearly not built for that, eating a pickle directly out of Wilson's container and trying to feed him bites while the team looked on in horror. Stop that, Foreman said. We're married, House replied. You're supposed to be happy for us. You're sitting on his thigh like a toddler, Todd pointed out. Wilson tried to shove him off, but House clung harder. It's lunch. I'm being affectionate. You're being unsanitary, Chase muttered. There's literally mustard on your lab coat. Wilson sighed. Can I not eat one meal without becoming part of a live-action HR case study? House popped another bite of Wilson's salad into his mouth. We're just showing the hospital that committed queer love thrives in sterile environments. Thrives is a strong word, Foreman said. You're currently trying to lick vinaigrette off his neck. Wilson batted House away. I swear to God, if I get written up again for inappropriate behavior in a break room, you'll what? House grinned. Punish me in Cuddy's old chair. The team in chorus saying, gross, leave, stop saying that. Meanwhile, what's new with the patient? New symptoms had developed. Tremor in her right hand, trouble focusing, and a fresh bruise on her hip she swore wasn't there yesterday. She's clotting wrong, Wilson said. And she's confused. Has anyone scanned her brain again? Chase nodded. CT was clean, but if this is autoimmune... It's not autoimmune, House cut in. It's toxic exposure. Everyone turned. She's a ceramicist, House said. Hoboken, studio downtown. You know it's an old glazes? Lead, Wilson murmured. House nodded. Lead poisoning. She's absorbing it through her skin and lungs. Chronic exposure. Symptoms match. Start creation and test her studio before she kneels over during brunch. Chase blinked. That's actually brilliant. House smirked. You're welcome. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go climb into my husband's lap and finish my cookie. Foreman groaned. If you so much as sniff his ear again, I'm calling HR myself. House whispered, worth it, and disappeared back into Wilson's orbit like gravity itself demanded it. The case was closed. Patients stabilized, creation therapy started, and for once, just once, House hadn't almost killed someone en route to solving the mystery. Foreman was halfway through updating the chart when Wilson wandered into the diagnostics team room, a little too relaxed, collar unbuttoned just enough to look suspicious. Chase looked up just in time to see House walk in behind him, toss a file onto the table, and say, "See, I'm solving medical enigmas and maintaining a robust sex life. You can't have it all." Foreman didn't even glance up.
Don't what? Don't do this in front of me. We're celebrating. House pressed a kiss just below Wilson's ear. Very professional. Wilson was trying not to laugh. House. Chase stood up with his coffee. I'm leaving. I don't get paid enough to witness foreplay between supervisors. But then House turned Wilson towards him and kissed him properly. Okay. there's like a little too much description about this kiss. Foreman froze mid-chart entry. Chase, halfway through the door, did a slow pivot like, did I just walk into a fanfic? You did. The kiss broke. Silence. House looked over them both. You know, statistically, two straight men stuck in close quarters for long enough will eventually consider becoming gay for the plot. Chase muttered, I'm going to set myself on fire, and walked out. Foreman, flat, said, I will call HR this time. House grinned and took Wilson's hand. Come on, dear, let's make out somewhere less medically inappropriate. Wilson was driving. House was controlling the music, which meant they were three tracks deep into a playlist titled Songs to Seduce a Hematologist. Halfway through Kiss from a Rose, Wilson sighed and said, we need to stop at the pharmacy. House perked up. House makes a stupid joke. They go to the pharmacy. They buy condoms. And then they go home. They open the door to the smell of roasted chicken, baked potatoes, and Bub's suspiciously perfect apple Kugel. Kugel. I don't know. Olivia ran into Wilson's legs, shrieking, Dad's, before launching into a high-speed rundown of her day, which included glitter glue, someone named Harper stealing a pencil, and why Barbie had to go to court. Sarah looked up from the table with a suspicious eye. You guys smell like a pharmacy. Were you buying lube or antacids? Oh my gosh, what the... Okay, Wilson goes both. And then Sarah's like, oh, I hate it here. Well, Sarah, why did you ask? This... I don't know what's going on. Anyways, after dessert, the girls go upstairs and it's just House and Wilson. Wilson stood next to him, both of them finally still. I think, Wilson said, it's time we told Olivia... She can't call her dolls a schmedrick anymore. I'm not entirely sure what that means. House looked betrayed, but she uses it so well. She called Barbie a putz with no soul. House smirked. That's accurate. Greg, fine. House sighed. We'll parent. Just a little. Minimal parenting. Agreed. They knocked their foreheads together, two men balancing medicine, marriage, mayhem, and matzo. And somehow it worked. And that is the end of Vicodin and Vows, the House X Wilson fanfiction. I gotta say, I'm kind of disappointed in this story. I feel like so many things happened and then also nothing happened at the same time. They spent a lot of time talking about things. And I felt like I heard the same conversations over and over again. But you know what? I do enjoy a good two unlikely characters making it work. So, but yeah, go House and Wilson. Anyways, I'll have to do some research, figure out what book we're going to read next, what fan fiction. If y'all have any ideas, please drop them in the comments. If you have a story you would like me to read or like a listener submission, you can email me at fanfictionbookclubpodcast@gmail.com. It's fanfictionbookclubpodcast@gmail.com. Fantastic. Y'all have a wonderful night, and I'll see you next time.